Hello. Welcome to episode number 4 of Voices from the Dark. This is going to be a quick intro. Today we have another installment of the Interviews with Artists series, or simply the Artists series. Just want to say one thing. I went to a recording with Dominic Vatine and met a lot of people who are interested in the podcast, a lot of artists, a lot of actors, and theater people. And there was, it was a great experience, and this series will continue. I'm also going to continue with the other series that, the new series that are coming out. And so I don't want to talk too much about that. So this episode features an interview with an actress named Alma. I believe she is of Italian, French, and German sort of heritage. And we had a great conversation. It was definitely political, philosophical. It was about a lot of things. So another great interview where it goes to many different places, and I think you'll enjoy it. So as usual, without further ado, here's my interview with Alma. Nice to see you again. Thanks for coming.
Indeed. Last time we saw each other was about maybe a month ago or something.
Yeah, at another cafe.
Yeah, at another cafe.
Yeah.
In another more created maybe scenery of stage the creative processes.
You mean we were talking about the...
I was talking about the setting itself.
I think it was more... it was like more set up. It was like... It was more... Yeah, curated is a good way of saying it. It looks better, I guess.
It looks... It's nicer. I mean, in Berlin we have the chance of having people with extreme... peculiar and specific taste for the context and design and like good element atmospheres. Yeah. So that's why we do have more and more shops that also kind of tend to wave on that, which in a way is nice.
Yeah.
And then sometimes you feel almost that it's a bit maybe super artificial. You're not sure, okay, wherever is this, like the authentic kind of way of the place, or has it completely been pumped up and like made pretty for me, you know, in a way, like
to sell you coffee.
Yeah, to sell your coffee.
So why don't you introduce yourself, Alma? Alma, right?
Yeah, Alma.
I'm saying it right now. Maybe a little bit about what you do. You know, this is the Voices from the Dark podcast, but you know, it's just a conversation. We don't have to say anything you don't want to, but you can say everything or nothing or whatever. No. You're an actress. That's how I know you.
Well, I am.
But I know you do other things because I saw. You are producing something as well.
Yes, I'm helping the production of a theater and film project of some, now friends.
Yeah.
I worked with a very interesting team out of the film independent community, helping one girl. Her name is Catherine Sultan. She's also art director, filmographer, video artist. And she needed some help on the... decor props department, and I did some black money for them.
Oh, okay.
And it
you
kind
don't have
of
to say that.
It's just literally black bills.
Yeah.
So
oh,
it was
is it?
Just
really?
It was just
oh, so,
really
okay.
It was
well,
black
that's
money.
Fine. That's fine.
We took it on the literal part
yeah,
of it.
Gotcha, gotcha.
And the set went really nicely, and the director, which I'm working with now on this project, was playing himself, or like not really himself, but kind of an extension of what his persona. It was a very meta kind of thing, and now he's the director for real, which comes for real from Zimbabwe, and has this new project, which is also a continuation of another project that he does. You know, kind of how nowadays it's all a bit more in this open kind of Kunstwerk, la Lyotard kind of approaches.
I know what you mean. Yeah, actually, that was the interview that I had yesterday. Was the guy Lalo Gomez is amazing, and he does it's. Sounds something similar, where he's playing, he's performing himself.
Nice.
So what's the name of that project, and what do you, you said you're doing the set design or set production?
No, that was the last project. For now, I'm on the production team, so I'm really just taking care of the production.
So
side, I have someone else that is helping me as well on that, and we have a very like consistent art department where Catherine is also involved.
Okay.
But I'm more taking over, as I said, just a production, more organizational parts.
Like, administration, maybe?
Yeah, more if you want to call it that. It's still, like, for example, we still developed a lot of concept for the society in the future, because as said, or not as said, but I will say it now, it's a tale that is set in kind of a dystopian future in 2023.
Yep.
And it's called That Fly, 70s sci-fi futuristic shit.
I love that
with
name. It's
double
so crazy.
Exclamation marks. That is a very important thing. And it plays a bit with all the fact that, you know, in the 70s, also late 60s, there was kind of a wave in the popular aesthetic and the reflection of the return of sci-fi, of dystopias, to address some of the most, fears of the society nowadays, and as a possibility also of critique, with a cover-up of addressing some of the most important things.
Yeah.
For example, you have this amazing film which is called Ikari XB61 or Ikari XB something. Oh my God, I'm so bad with names.
No, yeah, it doesn't sound familiar to me.
But it's a Czech movie which was shot in the 62, and it... Actually, it, like, when you recontextualize it, which was with, you know, like the Yugoslavia falling apart, the whole, like, the system, politic regimes, etc., and you see the topics of of power interactions, the imagination of a city in the future where resources have become like not available, and like to escape Earth in search for another life outside, etc. And you compare it to like what happened then, as like in the 70s, etc. You have these common themes of the preoccupation of a population at that time, that then extrapolated with the power of fiction and stories into the extreme, in order to like be able to make sense of these fears and to thematize maybe something as like, let's get on to something, or like, you know, like open your eyes in a way if you want.
Yeah.
Which I find sci-fi to be one of the, for me personally, one of the most interesting genres nowadays.
Because
we have all this text that are more on the theory, more on this intellectual crowds, essays, etc., which are fascinating indeed, but it's this critique that stays into the critique.
Mm-hmm.
And well, I don't know how you tend to be, but I tend to get then very in this introspection of what I receive as the content and the critique. I tend to be a very emotional person and to let things come very near me.
Okay.
So then I tend to despair rather than to try to be in the proposal of a counter-alternative, which then fiction allows you to not stand into the reality part, but also allow you to fabulize as the alternative. What could it be if the reality was not given? So like you have more potential to like make emerge, and who knows, if you can imagine something, maybe it can become real in the end.
I think I know what you're saying. So you're saying that when you critique something, you know, you're analyzing it in like how it would be in reality, but then what you like to do is to kind of get into the emotional side, which would be the fictional side. Is that what you mean? And through this kind of speculation, you can find pathways to other possibilities in reality.
Yeah,
so
other
fiction,
like,
you can change reality. Yeah. Is that what you're saying? Because I love that. If that's what you're saying.
Well, I mean, this is also kind of what I'm saying. But then we come back to the question of like the mirroring of reality and transformation of what appears to be the reality, or what is then the reality. You know, in the fact that nowadays we have all this kind of different lines and subjects and bubbles and layers and stories we choose to believe in that constitute then the basis on which we consolidate our view of the world.
And view of the world?
When that constitutes, like, that bring together the way consolidate. In fact, what I believe in is going to allow me to see the world the way I see it.
Right.
And if I changed what I believe in, I would probably see the world in a different way.
Would you say, like, perception is reality, something like that? Or
I do think that perception is reality in the subjective matter. But then we come back to the question, is there then something objective? And in the fact, I do believe that there is an objective, non like interpretational strata of reality that we cannot have access, because we are like thinking, interpreting social beings that always approach something with like, well, ourselves. Since I'm not Buddha yet, I haven't achieved, you know, to disconnect from the self.
Are you Buddhist?
Well, no, I'm a spiritual person, but in the end, I have a problem considering me following one philosophy of spiritualism, because in the end, it's still a philosophy that will then say this falls into it and this is not. And then we come back to the definition of it, that then, like, you know, to make sense of the complexity of what we believe, we want to categorize it and put, like, okay, this little definition on top, because it makes me more comfortable. I can associate it. Okay, this is where it belongs.
It's easier.
You know, it's easier, of course. Yeah. And we like it, or we like try to make it easier.
So that reminds me of, you know, I saw on Facebook that you posted a link from or about Jordan Peterson.
Oh, yeah.
And I'm only learning about this guy now, like, you know, like, let's say a month ago.
Okay.
And he reminds me of a lot of other speakers that, like, Sam Harris. Do you know Sam Harris?
Yeah, not as good, but, like, you know, names.
I also don't know Sam Harris that well, but these guys are similar. And maybe you want to say something about the Jordan Peterson article, but, I mean, it's very complicated, because, one, I think he's full of shit. And I also think Sam Harris is full of shit, even though I agree with Sam Harris on his views of, let's say, atheism, or more or less I agree with him. But Jordan Peterson just seems like a manipulative guy, let's say, lightly put it.
Let's just say that the problem is, like, I don't agree with Peterson on the broader part of the spectrum, but I do see some values in his interpretation patterns, and it is true that some of the things he says are indeed also sometimes given as such, but it's by saying that this is valid for everything and extrapolating it into the radical that then every kind of thought becomes dangerous and becomes totalitarian. And so the fact that if you have a seed that then will allow for a radical thought to merge, which then would more concentrate on the differences than of the similarities, then this, even the seed itself, maybe should be handled with care. And when I shared the article on Facebook, which I really like to do sometimes, is to share articles where they have a very straight point of view that is, like, shared or explained there by the author, which is not necessarily always mine. But to leave it there, and what happened was exactly what I wanted it to happen, is the reaction of the different kind of people down the post. You had my grandma and my mother, which responded to the post, which they are, they come from a very activistic, feministic, you know, they believe in an open theater, a social theater, etc.
I didn't see those comments. I saw some of the comments.
And well, and my grandmother was like, oh, again with those things, didn't history tell you anything, etc., etc. And then there was, like, some friends of mine, which I would say are very good critical thinkers, that then have this fascination of the critical thought for a person like Peterson, because he's someone that is going against the mainstream ideology, which nowadays is going, and thank God it is, more and more toward a more humanistic approach rather than an individualistic one. And so there is this fascination, like for also young, privileged, mainly white males, or like privileged white females, etc., like mainly that have, like, you know, also some educational background, to feel that the changes of the situation, how they are presented, and the movements of also, like, globalization, that some are positive and some are negative, indeed, in our ways of the other, they feel kind of threatened in their position, and it's always about refinding their own identity within a changing and complicating system. And, well, it saddens me that a lot of the time the definition of our own identity and space has to do with putting a barrier from me and the other. Because in the way, is there this possibility, you know, of going beyond that or not? Or is my definition and space here, my role, because it gives you confidence to know, okay, my role is this. I am a man. I am doing like this.
Yeah.
And women are like this, or et cetera, et cetera. Or boundaries are given. And if you take away the boundaries, it's way more difficult for you to interact or to be in the world because, well, who are you then if you're not one, but if you can, like, merge into the crowd, right?
Yeah. I mean, so, I think I understand what you're saying, but question, don't these boundaries already exist for especially people, women of color, you know, LGBT, you know, you name it, you know, people who are traditionally just disenfranchised, you know, they're separated from society, they're classed out, they're pushed out. I mean, these are boundaries that are that they are not creating themselves. So,
no, they're given,
but
definitely.
But people like Peterson are saying that it's the responsibility of those people who are being pushed out to push in, and I feel like that's just very very false. It's I feel like he's putting the burden on.
Well, this is the problem, maybe also this kind of more capitalistic idea of the fact that you are responsible for your own happiness and for your own success. And so, like, there is not such thing as a systemic violence.
Right.
But indeed, we see, and I cannot know for sure, some violences, because some violences will be always unknown to me because, well, guess what?
Well,
I am still white and privileged in
some
ways.
And also, you can't know everything.
I cannot know everything because there are some realities that I will never know. That some people, because of the system, how it is constructed, are part of their reality, everyday life.
Yeah.
And it is not true that, unfortunately, nowadays we have the illusion of being equal and having the same opportunities, but this is not true.
Right.
And
Jordan Peterson.
Jordan Peterson.
I feel like he's playing this game where he's saying that people are complaining too much and people should toughen up and all this stuff. And it's like, well, you never had to toughen up, Jordan Peterson. You have had everything, you know, not necessarily handed to him, but he doesn't have to go through the struggles that other people are complaining about. He thinks that they're complaining too much, but I think that they're complaining enough, and maybe they should complain more.
Well, I mean, I said, like, I think the confrontation with person that come from another background and that have a different story is essential for us to understand that, well, guess what? Maybe it's not whining. It's just explaining a situation that is like a burden for them and that is not changing and evolving and is impeding them to actually just have the same kind of chances that others have. But that's the problem. We have the illusion that we are born equal. And the problem is we are normally equal. But the second we come into this world, already we are not, from the context, from the like background of our families, you know, the names, where we grew up, what kind of experiences we will see, educations, access to resources, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So to think then that there can be a meritocratic society is kind of, well, being a bit living in this illusion, because, well, that's not true. If somebody that starts 100%. At point A and arrive at point B, that's good for him. But if somebody had to start at point minus A and arrives at point B, well, that's like maybe something that has to be valued more, because the processes of changing those different stratas will tell us and 100%. Inform us way more, because it's way more difficult to, like, you know, perceive and to change actually those stratas.
Yeah.
And in a world where we have the illusion that the boundaries are kind of taken out, this is even more problematic, because nowadays we are in this super interconnected satellite connection that makes the world as a one mass.
Yeah.
But at the same time, we forget that this kind of globalized exchange is still kind of completely controlled by the ones that already are empowered, because the bigger ones, etc., can have this exchange and this fluid thing. But the individual, when you break it down, decentralized like power, we're still very isolated in our own islots. So, like
Islands?
Islands, or like, you know, little agglomerates of territories.
I totally agree. And then you can also flip that on its head and say, like, if you're born into extreme wealth and power, you have to literally do nothing, and you are just perfectly fine. You know, if you're born into a, I mean, whatever, if you're born into the 1%, or if you're born into a millionaire family, billionaire family, you have, you don't know struggle, you know?
Well, I think that's...
And that's maybe, an island
I,
in itself.
I don't know if you don't know struggle. I think everyone, I think the human condition is always about experiencing struggle.
Yeah, but
it's
sure.
It's different kind of struggles.
Yeah.
It's struggles that if you're not given into that reality, you would never know.
That's a better
And of course
way
you can say it's not... Then the struggles are not about surviving, but are then more about the like realization of the self, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah, yeah.
But if we haven't secured the fact that the base for survival is given for everybody, you cannot speak about equal chances, because if people are trying to survive, they have not the time to live, then they don't have the time to like accomplish themselves or finding their true self, which already I think it's a bit difficult as a philosophy, but you know,
it's a privilege to be able to go soul searching, you know,
and
not have to worry about feeding, getting food on the table and stuff
definitely.
Like that.
Definitely. No, that I said, but like if you speak, if you cannot give the certainty that people are possible of living, then you cannot speak about like speak about like those equal chances or equal starting points.
Yeah.
And of course then the struggles become lesser if you want to categorize them like this, but I don't like to think of that in this sense, because there are maybe differences of objective like weight of struggle. But for the person that receives them or like that experience them, they're still struggles.
Yeah.
And to say, okay, you're struggling, but your struggle is bullshit.
No, you're definitely
you're
right. No,
even
you're right.
more accomplishing the fact that they're gonna say, oh yeah, you're not even capable of this, and then like re-closing itself on oneself. And that's way more difficult, because I said like we only can try to understand or expand our knowledges and go over our differences, not if we say we don't have differences, but if we see them and we say, okay, well then let's try to pass over them, or like let's try to understand what is the way we perceive the world, how it differs, because in the end we have a common ground, which is the way here, this is it, and then we have different ways of approaching, understanding it, and we arrive at different conclusions. So if we have a world that is there, how come that we arrive to different conclusions? Then we need to see, okay, which points are we basing ourselves on, right?
It's an ageless question. It's a question for the ages. Yeah. So how does this affect your work and your life? And I mean, I know I brought up the Jordan Peterson thing, but that's just because he's stuck in my mind, and like this whole topic of identity politics and so on and so forth is quite fresh, you know. I want to explore that, you know, but in terms of art and work and life, you know, do you think about this stuff like all the time?
I do well, quick note, I realized that I'd never really answered any of your questions completely, but
no, it's fine. Like I said, I don't even remember what my questions were. So,
but like,
and also, we were, well, I wanted to ask. Here's a question.
Okay.
So you seem to have a very solid grasp on like philosophical thought and critical thinking. Did you study philosophy? Did you study?
Well, I studied communication and cultural management in a university where we had the chance of having excellent professors on the social and cultural sciences. And I read a lot then also for my personal interest about the ethics and philosophical implication of technology, of human interactions. And I became fascinating by, not gender politics, but like systems of control, and like, you know, the typical Foucault kind of stuff. But
the panopticon.
Exactly.
I'm not a Foucault expert, but I
know a bit about him.
But you probably know a lot more than I do.
Well, there are some other friends of mine who probably know more than I do. Let's just say I have a lot of theories in my head that none I completely understand or are complete an expert in. That create the basis for my reflection. And the time where I studied, I had the chance of exploring some concept very briefly, but it is unfortunately more after my time at university that I went back to some texts and I said, like, oh my God, why didn't I really take the time to really understand and get that right in a way? But in my work, I try to base critical reflection or like to play with like speculative realities. I said, like, this is, I take like from a point thing. Like from the 70s, for example, to play on that, we have this movie that is about human and technological interaction. It's a society where like every human has a robot assistant for whatever he needs, for example, and since a black population is going extinct, they have someone to serve and protect them, but it's a personal assistant officer of the law. So you know, there's this page of like how like alienation, freedom, and like the way of which human interactions sometimes have less of a direct affective connotation, but that doesn't mean that if the affection can come from another part, you know, how people sometimes are in this conflict and like giving themselves this kind of sarcastical jokes that sometimes would not be interpreted by an external system who doesn't know that this relation between the two person is on this kind of exchanging of like, you know,
sarcasms
will not be taken over. Or we did a performance with a friend of mine where basically it's a bar that plays with pharmaceutical components into the drinks, and you have this kind of like thing of streaming it, and we did a beta test at one Bodinale night, for example, and it's also playing about like having a lobby which is a non-space where you can resemble the people and bring them about like the experience of how you drink the drink, what kind of substances you put into you. And it was a reflection that we started on like culture and nature, is there something, distinction between the one and the other, this kind of microdosing, quantifiable self, like, you know,
this
kind of fluids. It was just a bar, like it was a little bar thing. And it was like to play with the endocrine system, you know, a little bit based on.
But it was a regular bar that you took over?
Oh, no, it was, I said it was a very beta test of it. Mm. And it was at the Bodinale. We had a piano, a black piano, where we put.
Bodinale?
It's the contre soirée to the Berlinale, kind of. And it was at Urban Spree. They have a gallery part. Yeah, they featured a lot of the independent movies, etc. Mm. And we were just having in a little corner there on the piano with like plastic bottles and like fake plastic leaves. And we had like a drink with aloe vera and coconut with amino shots, one with 5-HTP, which is a... how do you say it precisely? It's a substance that your brain is gonna interpret as a serotonin.
Oh,
so
really?
It's gonna facilitate the fluctuation of it.
It's psychedelic.
It's not speed or cocaine.
But is
that's
it
not
psychedelic, like.
But it's a neurotransmitter, basically.
Oh, okay.
And but
a lot
like
of what you're saying
right
now is over my head, like this chemical. I have no idea what that is.
Well, it's just like I said, it's just like neurotransmitter. It's to play on the fact that. The substances that you put into your body are gonna have an effect on the way that you're gonna feel into the space, or like it was a kind of trend of the like quantifiable self of saying like, okay, if I take this in doses, I'm gonna do this, or also to play with the fact of more hidden fluid systems that the person is composed of fluids of what is inside my body, those substances, how are going to react. And we based ourselves on reflection on the endocrine system, so it was more like the system that regulates kind of your gender,
hormones,
if you want, hormones, exactly. And there's like, I have the chance of having friends that are extremely intelligent, which I can talk to, and they can teach me a lot of stuff about those things. And but in my work, I was more in, I would get more and more interested into biases, like algorithmical biases, gender biases, perception biases, etc. And so this is why, like, most of my, I would say, our practices nowadays are more trying to reflect on those biases. What is a bias? Where does it come from? How can we address it? And how can we have fun with it in a way? Like, because if we dramatize it too much, we're only gonna stigmatize even more this kind of fear and this kind of like detachment from it, and like they say, okay, like then let's go out of here, like far away. Like if you try to incorporate it and make fun of it, maybe you have a way of going beyond it, because you would be able to reappropriate it yourself and also to be aware that it is there.
That's amazing. That's yeah, I think that's, I would love to know more about that. This you know, the way that you said these are practices of yours, right? How you and so this is stuff that you try to do with all of your work, like with this mindset of playing with biases, playing with things, not taking things too seriously, so that you could explore it as opposed to withdraw from it. Like, don't
well, I mean, it depends if the project allows for it or not. Of course, I'm not. I don't want to impose something, you know, on the project or not. But I have the chance that I work in an art gallery, which kind of gives me a bit of an existential basis, let's just say it like this. And so I have the chance then in my free time to participate in other projects, which I choose because they appeal to me or for different reasons. And the project of the film, which when Michla approached me for that, was, first of all, a super fascinating script. The way he wrote it and the way he writes is very intricate, and I like the text per se, or the dialogues per se, already have those reflections and those things inside. And it was for me a very amazing ground to start and expand on some concept that I had in mind for like fictional futures. So we have the kind of like new natural colonialisms, post-colonialism studies, like lo-fi, hi-fi, panopticon, authoritarian, communal, like this diabolical togetherness kind of the city, you know, like, and to have fun with that was like amazing. So when it allows for it, of course, but I'm still figuring out a lot of stuff. So for now, I'm officially registered as a self-enterprise, which I do communication strategies and concepts. So it's very broad. Like, this is my official kind of job, like enterprise. Like, I'm in the French system as a freiberuflich, selbstständig.
Yeah, okay, okay, that's what I wanted to say. So you're a freelancer.
Exactly,
I get it.
Kind of thing. But in the French system, which.
Not in Germany.
Well, I mean, you know, globalized village, that's the thing. Okay. It's just that.
But when you need, I don't know if we're talking about the same thing, because like here in Berlin or in Germany, you have this tax ID number. Maybe I'm misunderstanding.
I have it too. Yeah. No, it's the same.
So when you say the French system, like you.
Oh, it's just that. That's just a very basic accounting thing. It's just that you have the number of recognition, but in the end, you need to declare it all in once so that you don't do double bookkeeping, because double bookkeeping is kind of an illegal practice, and I don't want to end up doing that, I guess. So I need to have it all centralized together. So like I write my things, I can work from wherever, but then like it falls onto like the French taxation things.
So basically, you're technically working as a French person in Germany.
Yeah,
okay. I understand. But
but like, for example, like, you know, I've also started doing things that I've never done before.
That's
like
good.
I mean, I did I worked with friends that opened a startup for the collecting and distribution of art and fluctuations like that, you know. How nowadays we try to have this more like decentralized, controlled, like
blockchain
streams of like commodities. In the end, it's always about a capital that is then distributed, and it's just about like, if you distribute it more, like try to explode those concentration of powers and like little nexus of like artists and you know, channels of distribution. And they did a publication which played with the fact that, is it art or is it can it, like, could it be thrown away, you know, the fact that we produce so much nowadays and for objects in their lifetime, there is kind of two alternative in the end. Like, you use it, you consume it, etc., but in the end, like, either it goes into the museum or it lands up in the trash, you know? So it's like, so there was this kind of thing, and we did a publication because they had an exhibition opening, and that this warning of having a publication that they put in the toilet. Like there was a like a old toilet that was not used to have it there, and it was like on the pissoir of Duchamp, etc., to make it like this.
And
we played a bit like I had the chance to do the graphic design of it, which I never did before.
Okay.
Which in the end worked, which is nice.
Yeah.
And we played also a bit with this kind of like brutality, color splash, you know, like to try to have this aesthetic of not too refined in a way of because. I said, like, I do believe that more and more of the society has become more and more violent without telling you that it is.
Yeah.
In the sense that we live in super privileged, and it's hidden in the sense that we are living in none of the best times ever. Yeah, like when it comes to
You said one of the best times?
One of the best times ever. Well, I don't know. I was not there in all of them.
I'm very skeptical when anybody ever says that. But
I said, like, from a general.
You mean in terms of technology?
Like, from the times that we know, we have better health systems. We have, in war, like, you know, from the general, if you generalize, which I hate, but sometimes you do and you end up doing it, we're living in a very good kind of stage.
Yeah.
But the violences that is there is not the violences that we're used to before, because it's violences that have created by the complexity of this growing interconnectivity. So, like, you know, processes of power, processes of like urbanization, processes of confrontation, and of those are like violent, but without appearing as such.
Yeah, and we don't call those things violent.
We don't label them as violent. Yeah.
So I love everything that you've said so far. You've blown my mind a little bit. I feel very confused. And it's okay. It's it releases serotonin into my brain. So
that's a good way to go, right?
Yeah. That's the best way to blow your mind. So let's take a little break and come right back.
Sure.
We're back.
We're back. Yay.
We have water. Viva con agua. It's a good water to buy. Help. Apparently, there's 30% of the world that doesn't have access to clean water, so, or drinking water. So on the break, we talked about a few things.
Yeah.
We talked about trust in cities. We talked about setting boundaries for ourselves in our lives. What else did we talk about? I mean, we can go into any of these topics if you want. Or if you want to say more about your... such a long title for that thing, I can never remember, but I always
that
remember fly, the fly.
Sci-fi 70s futuristic shit with two exclamation marks.
Yeah, with two exclamation marks, And so when is that coming up? And there's like a whole bunch of dates that you mentioned, which, you know, maybe you want to tell
the listeners.
Well,
we mentioned during the break, so since the idea of the project comes from a play that was done before, we start from a performance into a theater play that will then be expanded into a film.
Mm-hmm.
That itself, the film will have two parts, one interior into this indoor space and another one that will be over the summer into the outdoor, kind of re-putting it inside. And so the first event that we are having is the play per se, which is gonna be at the beginning of May.
Yeah.
We're gonna have on the 10th, 12th and 13th of May at a place called Zonoteca.
Zonoteca.
Which is at Hobrechtstrasse.
Really? That's my street.
54. It's a very cool space.
That is my street. What is that? 54 is near Weserstrasse, I guess.
It's Hobrechtstrasse, and then, well, you have here, you have the Geist.
Geist and Glass,
And then you have the parallel that cuts it, and this is the Hubrechtstrasse.
Yeah.
And it's a facade, you will see there's this red kind of facade. They have an exhibition kind of room in the front and a kind of workshop in the back. There is a very interesting person also that does upcycle of and remodelization of old furniture.
There's a bar.
And there's a bar.
And there's a, like, sort of a, not a Kita, not a Kindertagesstätte, there's a, like a family, I don't know if you know it, my wife goes there with some other parents.
In the front there is some of a garden kind of.
Yeah, there's
thing.
Like a play, like a Kinderplatz or Spielplatz, like a playground. And then across from the playground there's this family place.
Okay, I didn't
I can't remember the name of it, but it's like a place where you can go and They have set times that you go there. It's like 10 in the morning and 4 in the afternoon. And if you have kids, you can go there and just, they have like snacks, and it's very interesting.
Nice. Yeah.
So it's there. And what's the name of that bar right there next to the upcycling place? It's like something with an R.
But I'm not sure about it. Sorry, but
your place that you're gonna have on May 10th, 11th, and 12th. What's the name of that place again?
Well, we're gonna have it on the 10th, 12th, and 13th because the 11th, one of our super duper actresses has another show.
Okay.
So that's why we're gonna have two dates on the 12th, one matinee and one at night normally to balance it. But it's at Zonoteca.
Zonoteca,
yes, exactly.
And I can't say that I've seen the play. I mean, I've walked by it hundreds of times, but...
Right now, they have a green screen installed because they did a workshop with some kids. So maybe if you pass by, you're going to see it's like this red facade, and then inside they have the green screen.
Okay.
But we're going to make a nice scenery for that, too. So there's a lot of... Well, we're very excited for it.
And so on the 10th, 12th, and 13th, that's open to everybody to come.
That's open. That is the actual play. This is open to everybody, etc. We would like for you to join us if you can.
I'm going to try to get
and,
there for sure.
We have some dress rehearsal, which is going to be a bit less formal and not.
And that's
the premiere.
A Geist im Glas. No,
this is also at Zenoteca, but it's like a few days before. We have a dress rehearsal on the 6th, 7th, and 8th. The event at Geist im Glas is a family and friends get together where we want to show you the processes of design and storylines that we have explored. So we're going to have some visual presentation of the universes we created, some concepts on the universe we've created. Michla in Kube, the director, is also going to talk more about the story, the idea of the project. We're going to have some forecast of some objects and accessories we're starting to design. We're going to probably have two of our cast that is going to perform a song that is part of this aesthetic world we created, some drinks, you know, some get-together, and to exchange on the ideas. As we have tried in this project to have not us as a team in comparison to the audience and in this closed finished product that is presented, but also to include more and more exchanges and feedback and to confront, okay, this is what we have so far, what do you think? You know, because in the end, of course, we need to believe in what we're doing, but we're also going to be able to see how people are going to react to it and if it makes... Like, what are the reaction we suscit? Like, it comes from there.
Yeah.
And so this is the time on the 17th as Geist im Glas, which is, by the way, a super nice bar, which nice cocktails.
Yeah, definitely. I know the place.
To, like, get together and exchange and connect more. Because in the end, we're all trying to make something creative and to make sense of our practices. And as we spoke before about perfection,
you know?
We all have this thing that we do cling to the idea of perfection, but in the end you can never know if your idea or the strata you have taken would allow for not arriving to perfection, but for arriving to something maybe closer to something good, if you don't confront it and if you don't share it in the end. You know, would you rather create something and keep it for yourself until it is perfect and then thus never putting it out and creating it? Or is it better actually to just put it out into this kind of additivism mechanism of like, okay, it's about adding it to the visual presentation, and I don't know which is the right way to go, but this is like, you know...
The way you said it sounds great to me. I mean, I think, we have to take risks and be willing to fail, and with this podcast, you know, I am very self-critical, but I'm just going to put it out there. And I think that this kind of thinking and this, I guess, philosophy is very empowering. It's like, it's not an original idea. It's the willingness to fail and this type of thing. But it's definitely uplifting. And those are the stories I like to hear. And I appreciate what you're saying. Yeah.
Well, in the end, it's always about trying to, I guess, uplift.
Yeah.
Because we are, I don't know about you, but I can only talk about myself in this sense. So I find that a lot of the reflections and the topics that we are indeed concerning ourselves with are wearing us a lot down on the kind of more emotional side of it, because they're heavy, because they're not agreeable, because there is frictions, and because it's about power mechanisms that always are also violent in their distinction. Every distinction is also a violence. So since there is such a negative emotionality polarization around the subjects, it's important to sometimes try to depolarize them with this connotation and to just say, okay, well, let's just do something. Let's just create it, put it out there, sharing, trying to have a nice moment, trying to take ourselves also maybe not too seriously. Even in the end, I have the problem that I do end up taking it too seriously.
Well, you're the only person that you are. It's like you're your only self. I mean, I guess some people have multiple selves, but
Do you believe that you are one consistent self, or do you believe that you're multiple selves?
I definitely have multiple selves. Yeah. I self-censor a lot. I did sort of one podcast with a friend of mine about that. And for sure, in my work life, you know, in my day job, I definitely self-censor. I don't talk about any of the stuff that we just talked about with those people. Sometimes, yes, when it's, you know, outside of the workplace, maybe in a more kind of personal setting. But, yeah, I definitely try to be someone else. You know, I am someone else there.
So it is, in the sense, always when we go back to the concept of society, of the visibility of the show, you know, like Guy Debord and stuff, that we are in a way also always performing ourselves in comparison to the other, the person maybe we want to appear as such, and sometimes we end up not knowing which one is the performer part of it, or definitely which one is then us, and maybe it fluctuates so much. I know that I have lost grasp of reality a lot of times because of that.
I like to lose grasp of reality. I'm a fiction writer, and I create worlds, like small worlds, or all the time. But and you know, another time that I feel like I'm another person is, I guess, with my wife. I feel like I might say that I'm more myself with her, but then I'm also not so proud of the way I act with her, because I'm maybe too open about my negative personalities. So, and she probably knows more about that than anyone else, you know, all the bullshit that I, you know, put on her, basically. You know, obviously because I live with her and we're always together. And I could say that maybe that's my more real self, but I don't want that to be my real self where I'm like an asshole.
No, but I mean, like, we're not, like, it's never about whites or blacks. It's always about segment of grays, and we're not always our best selves.
Right.
And in the way, if you choose to go into a relationship that is also on the, like, you know, for you, like, you're with her on an official base, you have constructed your life together, and you have then created this kind of trying to be honest with one and the other, and you're also confronting then the best parts of yourselves with one and the other, but also the worst parts.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, I guess we also are our worst judges, so that the way that we will also present, maybe when we are into this kind of openness, we show sometimes the worst parts and we talk about the worst parts, and the person receives that, but sometimes maybe it's too much. I don't know. You said maybe you have the impression that maybe it's too much, but
would you have it any other way?
Like, you know, like, would you want to? So is there things that are better than left unshared, even if you want to share everything with the other? And is that maybe not also a romantic idea of it?
That, I think that is a romantic idea, to share everything. And, you know, and I definitely don't want to share everything with anybody, because there are so many negative aspects, and I think everybody has a lot of negativity, but you have to kind of work through it on your own, but also with other people. But you don't want to put everything on somebody else, because that would be way too much, I think. So
I had made that mistake a few times in the past, so with some relationship, not understanding boundaries. I said we spoke about that during the break time, about the fact that sometimes we tend to forget our own boundaries, and then we tend to exceed them, and thus also sometimes exceeding the boundaries of the other. By also, when you have this close relationship and when you build a relationship with the other, sometimes you forget that, well, it's not, you forget that there is not the one, but that it's still two entities. And it's not just one person that merge into the self and stuff. Yeah. So you still need, in a way, to maybe keep those boundaries and to respect and to also understand the boundaries of the other, which sometimes when you're maybe as me, like someone that gets into a very emotional like trip, sometimes it's just like forgetting and re-having maybe this romantic ideals, which in the end does it a lot of harm. But
yeah, obviously understanding boundaries is the first step to, I guess, overcoming them or crossing them in a positive way.
Yeah.
Instead of just like invading someone's space or invading someone's comfort. You know. And this whole, you know, one of the goals here, like what I really want to explore with this podcast is like, how do creative people, like what lessons can, like, I think that everybody is creative and everybody should be more creative. And that everybody has like an artist inside of them, to be a little romantic or corny or whatever. But I think that the way that artists and creative people think and the way that they kind of live can be helpful to people who don't consider themselves artists. And I think, it's almost like a better way of living. And that's what I want to share. And, you know, this whole idea of putting yourself out there and like exploring your flaws and exploring your weaknesses, I think it's very empowering as well.
But in a way, if you consider yourself an artist, or if you are an artist or a creative person, it always has to do more that you treat and you are maybe also more in contact with the ego part of yourself.
Okay.
Because to be an artist is to pretend that what I have to say and what I have to explore and put in the world out there is of value.
Yeah.
Which everybody kind of has a value of putting something out there. Definitely. But then to consider yourself to say it to this pretentious, you have to have this pretentious nowadays.
Yeah.
And the fact that with the possibility of global platform or scene, it has become more and more possible for people that to express and to consider and to put their etiquette as such, to explore those selves and those realities, is an important part, especially because there are processes that are become less and less of interest for the human, in the sense that the machine can do it better. And so even if we see that machines are starting also to get creative, there are some way of dealing with the human condition, the reflection, the putting out there that the artist tries maybe to do, that the machine as such cannot do or cannot arrive yet there.
Yeah, exactly.
So it's about like trying to play with those realities of expression, and about maybe also trying to make sense of your condition in the sense. And the creation process, as we said, like the fact of considering yourself an artist, you are with the ego, you say like, okay, what I do is putting something out there to realize my best thing that I can put out there is to present this. And in the way, every profession also does that, you know, someone that chooses to become a teacher is because they believe most of the time that, you know, they can do good by educating, by bringing something back to the world. And the artist has in some cases no other pretension also that to say, hey, what I have to say could bring something outside as a reflection, as a thinking possibility for somebody else. And so like it's always about seeing, okay, what can I maybe offer, and how does that make sense to give? And maybe it's more honest to say, hey, at least I'm dealing with my ego directly, I'm an artist and I put it out there, than to say, hey, I'm gonna do some social work, which is important and is needed, but then it has the same thing of like, I'm also doing that for my ego, but I'm not accepting or I'm not realizing that maybe I am. Because in the end, we're all super egoistical, and it's like, especially in our Western capital societies, we have this concept of the individual that is so praised and so deeply enraciated that we all have become numberlists.
We've all become what?
Numberlists, like from the belly button, nombrilist, it's a French term, it's like that my belly button is kind of a nombrilist, you say, it's like when someone is like concerned with the inside of his belly button.
Yes. The English way of saying that.
What'd you say?
It slips. It's yeah. I can't think of it right now. But you're basically looking inward, and you're looking towards your belly button. Yeah. It's like
I'm thinking that your belly button is the center of the universe, and it's so important that everybody should know it.
Yeah.
But at the same time, like
But it's this action of like looking down, looking in, closing yourself off to what's around you in a way.
And maybe also the fact that when we try to express one of our vision out, which is problematic, maybe for an artist, or I don't know, but I would guess that you strive on feedback, but at the same time, you need to be confident enough of what you have created, because there's so much that always can be criticized, and especially if you're putting out a personal idea, and if you associate this idea with yourself, because you deal with your ego as an artist putting it out there, then it's difficult maybe sometimes to not consider the critique of your work or of your thought as a critique of the self that is presented there for you.
Yeah.
So like that's why like a lot of person maybe also nowadays more and more person use also like pseudonyms or have this fictional character's identity to say, okay, like this is the way of distanciating from it and making itself of this alter ego that is then the creator or the person there, so that it is always through the fiction and through the narrative also a way of protecting yourself, maybe.
Do you have an alter ego?
I have a project in mind for a few years that, well, not a few years. I bought the domain of the site last year, and I've not had the time to go on and do what I wanted to do. But there is a project or a concept that I would like to explore on the topic of fictional characters.
You don't have to say what it is, you know. But
well, we'll see where it will come or not. But
Yeah, it's an interesting idea, the pseudonyms and, you know, I mean, it seems like we always come back to boundaries and like what, you know, what are those things that separate us from everybody else and how those actual boundaries sort of create ourselves, and they're like these multiple selves. All has to do with boundaries, and it's very, very interesting.
But for me, I guess like from a personal standpoint, if we go back, like the problem is always a matter of perception, and if you have not confronted yourself with the possibility that something might not be as such, you will never know, or like you cannot know something that you were not exposed to, or you cannot, you know, like grasp the existence of it if you were not exposed to it, because you can grasp the like idea, like you can grasp the concept of it, but you will not realize what it implies or what it has to do. And I was born in a very multi-culti kind of family. We were very expanded. My parents are actors. And so this kind of performance, this kind of fluctuation of reality has always been something that was present in my life. I mean, one of the first times I saw my father, he was wearing a costume of like a play, because they were having a shoot, you know, and he came to the hospital. And I saw my mother shoot my father to death multiple times, or like super strange stuff. That's as funny. A child that fucked a lot with the idea and the conception of reality, you know, or what was real and what wasn't. So it was very fascinating about those kind of like associations. Okay, like if something is presented as such and I perceive it as such, is it as such, or is it played as such? You know, like, is it presented to me because they want it to appear like this, or is it like this? Like, for example, like, apparently, I don't remember, but apparently the first time I saw my father on stage, I was 4, and they brought me, he was playing, I don't really know what, a Shakespearean thing where he was like a warrior and he was wearing super gold, and it was like, you know, he was just coming out of this pyramid, and like he was all in gold and bold and stuff, and he was like this super tyrant, like super strong figure, and in this moment I screamed Papa, and so it broke up kind of the fact that I was presented, because for me, like, you know, I said I don't remember, but like they started laughing, apparently
the audience
because there was this distinction, because what was presented and then the reality of the situation, that it is just a man that is on stage performing this superhuman, super, you know, like that then like was broken up, because in the end, well, guess what? It's still a father also, and it's the fact that we forget a lot of the time with our actors, or like the way that we have the fascination for public, you know, like, so we say like, wow, he's such a star, oh my God, I love his, and stuff. We forget, okay, well, this is what you get presented of, it's not the person that is behind.
Yeah.
And so yeah, I don't know, for me it's always about the fluctuation of what is perceived real and what then is, and you, unfortunately, I have not figured a way completely out yet to make sense of it, because we have also the things of the bubbles in the way, or the confirmation kind of bias in the sense.
You said
that
you talked a lot about bubbles already. So can you say like what you mean more about, like what do you mean by bubbles? Like
bubbles, bubble. For me, I guess a bubble is. Is a center, how do you say it so that it makes sense also for me? a bubble would be a concentration of, it's a strata of, it's a construct of reality. It's a strata, it's a bubble of reality.
Yeah.
So it's a closed system.
It's a closed
system in the sense that I have my bubble of Italian culture, for example, which then is all the person and all that I associate to it. I have this bubble of this, and I have my bubble of socialization, for example. And when I would go into the bubble that thinks that art is great, well, guess what? I'm going to find only people that agree that art is great,
okay,
you know,
gotcha, yeah.
Because the bubble in itself is just constituted by the person that make it and that agree within that.
Yeah.
And so it's way more difficult to try to pop the bubble, to let it explode, to like actually allow for a confrontation. So that's why when I say confirmation bias is when we tend to confront ourselves with, or talk or spend time with persons that are of similar like views of us, because in the end we like to be reconforted in the fact like, hey, what I think and what this is true.
Yeah.
So like it is like the bubble of and it's a kind of way of like feeling together in isolation, in the fact that you have all those possibilities of confrontation with just with the others that just would agree, but you're still like, okay, this is very
I totally get what you're saying. I think you've said it very clearly,
okay,
that you know these bubbles are I usually refer to those bubbles as silos, like just a large tube that you're stuck in. And yeah, but I think it's quite clear. I just wanted to know exactly what you meant. Yeah, definitely agree.
I like the idea of bubble because I feel like the bubble is something airy that is in the air and kind of like stays together until it pops. And I would
delicate.
Like it to pop.
It's delicate.
It's super delicate. Yeah, etc. And the problem is that a lot of our bubbles we don't recognize as such.
Yeah.
Or and also like we don't want them to pop.
Yeah.
Because sometimes if it pops, then you're just like, you lose a complete ground of it, because then the bubble pops, you know, you have all the thing of, you know, soap that was there, they go into the air and they merge into all different direction. And there.
And if it's a bubble like, that's floating, when it's floating, because bubbles generally float, I guess, if your bubble pops, then you're falling now.
Yeah.
And it's scary.
Definitely.
But
the bubble, like to it was also like for the confirmation and the sphere of what goes into the bubble, in the sense that nowadays also with the way the way information flows has always, it's not centralized. We have still like some bigger centralized ways of presenting information and of achieving information, but most people get their news from the feed or from a shared information of, or what they actually go and actively look for.
Yeah.
But if I actively go and look for on those like channels that I know are, it is my bubble reconfirmation, my bubble. And we have a very big problem with like finding information that completes not only just what we are used to or what we would generally get as a content or as an information.
Yeah. So yeah, for sure. I think that's our time for today.
And
sorry. No. I think that's our time for today. I really loved this conversation and the whole bubble idea. Maybe one day you can come back on the podcast and we can break some bubbles.
We could try to. That would be nice, actually. Yeah.
Okay, great. So thank you again for being on the podcast.
But thank you for having me.
Yeah, of course.